hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and fought and died to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. I read about some squirrely guy who claims he just don't believe in fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fort I'd keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a fort I'd keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
You're walking down, running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's in his program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia and New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening in the European heartland.
You got working on old junk cars in the daytime.
They look like two. Sorry about this. We're trying to find on the control book board here.
He sold used parts to make ends meet. Covered with grease from his head to his feet, cussing the sweat and the Texas heat and mosquitoes. And a neighbor said,
this is Paul
like
Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Having a little bit of a control problem here.
He'd fight till his heart was black and blue. Didn't know how he'd made it through the hard times. He bought our house on a GI Bill, but it wasn't worth all he had to kill to get it. He drank Pearl in a can and Jack Daniels Black. Chewed tobacco from a mail pouch sack. Had an old dog that was trained to attack sometimes. He'd get drunk and mean as a rattlesnake, and there wasn't too much that he would take from a stranger. There were 13 kids and a bunch of dogs, a house full of chickens and a yard full of hogs. I spent the summertime cutting up logs for the winter, trying like the devil to find the Lord, working like a nigger from my room and board. Coal burning stove, no natural gas. If that ain't country, I'll kiss your ass. If that ain't country, you'll hear lift the Pope. If that ain't country, it's a damn good joke. I've seen the grand old Opry, and I met country, I'll kiss your ass. Mama sells eggs at a grocery store. My oldest sister's a first-rate whore. Dad says she can't come home anymore, and he means it. Ma just sits and keeps her silent. Sister, she left 'cause Dad got violent, and he knows it. Mama, she's old far beyond her time. From chopping tobacco, and I seen her crying. When blood started flowing from her calloused hand, and it hurt me. She'd just keep working, trying to help the old man to the end of one row and back again, like always. She's been through hell since Junior went to jail. When the lights go out, she ain't never failed to get down on her knees and pray because she loves him. Told all the neighbors he was off in the war, fighting for freedom. The graveyard for automobiles. At the end of the porch, there was four stacks of wheels and tires for sale for a dollar or two. Cash. There was 50 holes in the old tin roof. Me and my family was living proof. The people who forgot about poor white trash, and if that ain't country, I'll kiss your ass. If that ain't country, it'll hurt if you pull. If that ain't country, it's a damn good joke. I've seen the grand old Ivory, and I bet Johnny Cash. If that ain't country, I'll kiss your ass.
That's David Allan Cole, and I hadn't meant to play that, but that's if the same country, and I'm this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the Fighting Side of Me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Had an interesting note from a person I know in Drayton Valley, Alberta. Name is Marcy, and this is kind of a disturbing thing, and gonna read it to you and share it with you. It's more of living in the big multicultural ugly, and she entitles this "Pardeep Wouldn't Serve Me," as it wouldn't serve me feel. As Canada transforms into a country not our own, small towns such as Drayton Valley, Alberta, are going through a silent takeover that no one hears about. It was a fine summer morning around 10:30 a.m. A new Shell fuel station had just opened, which does not deserve the words service station. I pulled my vehicle up to an available pump and do the usual. Lift nozzle, select fuel grade, and begin to fill the tank. At the 8-cent mark, the fuel shuts off. Knowing that squeezing a dead nozzle makes the inside attendant aware there is a problem, the problem is not being addressed. I enter the interior of the gas hub, and a 24-year-old, call him Pardeep Mandeep, was serving a white male customer. An older white equipment operator waited in front of me. I wait. Customer one leaves, and Pardeep begins to talk at me. I give him a look that was anger and point to the next white guy in line. When my turn was due, Pardeep says, "I don't know what happened. You touched the nozzle and the breaker went off." I told him I would pay $30 cash for gas so I could just leave. I pay and return to the pump. I begin the procedure once again. Once again, no fuel. Party runs out and says, I don't know, try another pump. So I start up my truck, move over to the far left pump facing the getaway position, begin the procedure once again, pull the trigger, no gas. Party runs out with my $30 in hand and says, I don't know, no gas for you, so sorry. As I take my money, I look to the far right right pumps, and an older gentleman is with his truck and camper and is getting fuel. You make your own, form your own opinion. But if that isn't a silent Islam gesture, that I was not welcome at my own country's fuel station and sent away by a new Canadian, I would have to say Islam is now showing its ugly face and getting away with it. As who would complain? Whom would I complain to? Muhammad the owner or Manjeep the manager? There's nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. That very day I lost my Canadian pride. Cheers, Paul. It's doomsday for Canadians. Marcy Robbins, Drayton Valley, Alberta, Canada. These things happen, you might say. At the very least, it's absolute incompetence. And you wonder, how are these people getting to buy into service stations? I don't know. I don't have an answer. But that's a real concern. Oh, yes. In today's National Post, a headline, which really shouldn't be a headline, but it is, and it says, it's about to say, no charges in Proud Boys incident at Mi'kmaq ceremony. Now, it wasn't a ceremony, and if you were to read this in a Canadian paper, if I was to ask you how to spell Mi'kmaq, you would probably spell the way it sounds, M-I-C-M-A-C. It's a tribe of Indians in Nova Scotia. But it's spelled M-I apostrophe K-M-A-Q. Sometimes when the Indians say it, it comes out something like Mi'kmaq. When you read it this way, there's no way that it can be pronounced any other way than Mi'kmaq, or Mi'kmaq. It's also this endless, disgusting catering to minorities, or the minority du jour, which is right now the Indians, the native people. The story goes, no criminal charges will be laid against five so-called Proud Boys who disrupted a Mi'kmaq ceremony in Halifax on Dominion Day, the Royal Canadian Navy says. Now, hang on a second. Disrupted a Mi'kmaq ceremony. It wasn't a ceremony, it was a protest. It was a protest at Lord Cornwallis's statue. And Lord Cornwallis founded the city of Halifax, a major maritime port, capital of Nova Scotia, in 1749. He would go on to fame in the American Revolutionary War, some 25 years later. They didn't disrupt it. Five fellows, all of them sailors with the Royal Canadian Navy, in civvies, in polo shirts and pants, with a red ensign flag, the flag of the true Canada, the real Canada, the old Canada, and singing God Save the Queen, went to this memorial, to the statue, where the Mi'kmaqs and some of their allies were holding a protest demanding that it be taken down, because they don't like Lord Cornwallis. So the statue ought to be taken down. Well, I don't like some Indians. Should we take their babies down? Their beef is that Lord Cornwallis offered a bounty for Mi'kmaq scalps. Now, before we all have a collective seizure and, the genocide of it, this was done by all sides. The French offered bounty for scalps, usually of English settlers. The English offered bounty for scalps. The Indians scalped one another. It was a fairly easy way to run off with a trophy. In days before you could take a selfie or even a photograph, proof that you had killed an enemy and
still portable when the only way to get around was by canoe or foot. In the odd case, there might be horses. But in other words, it was a fairly efficient, if rather gruesome, way that proved you'd killed somebody. Now, for one thing, it was done by all sides. For another thing, it was it goes way, way back into Native history. The white man did not invent the taking of scalps. Well, why would Lord Cornwallis do that? Well, duh, the Micmacs had attacked some of the few English settlers in and around Halifax. So, tit for tat. That's the way war was fought back then. You know, if you're peaceful, he isn't going to be offering a reward for your scalps. It was usually a way to motivate your own soldiers or your allies to go out there and do their job. Nice? No, of course not nice. That's the way warfare was fought back then. But that perspective is not often provided, though, today to people. You know, we're supposed to have a collective intake of breath and call for the equivalent, today's equivalent of smelling salts. All the five young members of the Canadian Navy were doing was standing up for this country's tradition. They flew the red ensign flag, sang "God Save the Queen," which is one of the anthems of Canada, the part of our British heritage. And when one of the loud-mouthed natives told them to get off of fucking Indian land, or fuck off Indian land, the sailor quite rightly said, "But this is Canada. That's not Indian land anyway. Sorry. We won." There was a, you know, that's what they did, and then they left. No fighting, no shouting. If there was shouting, it was on the part of the Indians. They didn't hurl missiles at them. They didn't even chant and try to disrupt their protest. That was it. Well, they were immediately disciplined. They were put on suspension. They're all on they're all in training, so they're. Their training was, they're put on suspension. They're still on some form of probation. And there was profuse apologies from the Admiral of the Atlantic Command, from the head of the armed forces, who a few weeks later would prance in the gay pride parade last Sunday in Ottawa, in the gay pride parade. Now, a couple of generations ago, anybody doing that would have been thrown out of the armed forces. We didn't have a place there for homosexuals. I don't know if General Vance is a homosexual. Just being in the gay pride parade doesn't necessarily prove anything one way or the other. But it's disgusting content. But that's okay. Standing up for traditional Canadian values, well, that became a big political issue. Okay, so with that as background, no criminal charges will be laid against these five. Well, why should they? They didn't do anything criminal. There should never be any question. See, increasingly, what's being done in Canada is that speech is being criminalized. Or at least people think, I'd better be careful because I could be charged. Well, the fact is, they would have to go pretty far to be charged, but it's not entirely out of the realm of possibility. Not in this case, but and you know, we become a much less free country. Rear Admiral John Newton said Thursday that an investigation had wrapped up and no further actions would be taken against the servicemen, although they remain on an unspecified term of probation and must adhere to unspecified conditions. Well, I'd like to know what those are. They're pretty repressive. The servicemen had been relieved of their duties and reassigned to other jobs pending the results of the military police investigation into the incident at a statue of Halifax's controversial founder, Edward Lord Cornwallis. Well, only controversial to the Indians, or to some Indians. And this comes smack dab up against a problem, both here and in the United States, of the politically correct, the modern-day intellectual Taliban wanting to trash our history wherever representations of our history violate current norms of political correctness. The others are being returned to their operational units and regular duties. Okay, one might say, all's end, well, that ends well, but these five young guys are being put through hell over something that if we had real commanders who stood behind their men would never have gotten beyond square one. Why? Because they would have said, A, these guys are out of uniform. They were representing themselves or their own little group. They were not representing the Royal Canadian Navy. End of story. They were doing nothing wrong. They were standing up actually for traditional Canadianism. That ought to have been admirable. Not, yeah. Anyway, speaking about more depredations, a couple nights ago, the Negro mayor of Baltimore, Negris, surreptitiously, under cover of darkness, had some flatbeds come and haul away four statues, Southern statues, of people the current Negro administration does not approve of. One, the Chief Justice Taney of the Supreme Court, who didn't know things, but he presided over the Dred Scott decision. Statues honor people who played a significant role in history. It doesn't mean that today we agree with everything they said and did. It simply recognizes that they were great men and made a contribution. That doesn't mean more statues can't be erected or more plaques or memorials to people who make a contribution in our own times. Anyway, in fact, it was a former, or I should say, it's an Indian leader in Canada who headed up, he's now a senator, and headed up the Reconciliation Commission, which went through tens of millions of dollars and lots of hearings and so on. But anyway, even he said that it should not, here in Canada, it should not be a matter of taking down statues. For instance, there now is agitation afoot to change the name of schools named after Sir John A. Macdonald, our first Prime Minister. Why? Well, he was against Asiatic immigration, as were most people at the time, incidentally. And he set up the, or it was on his watch that the residential school system was set up, which has been a huge weapon for inculcating guilt over the past decade or so among white Canadians. Well, really, it shouldn't be. The residential schools were a form of rough frontier approach to a big problem. By 1885, with the completion of the Canadian Pacific Railway, Canada was united from coast to coast as a country by a railway. We now had a coherent Canada, a mare or square mare, that's from sea to sea. And in that country, we had nomadic bands of Indians. Now, in some areas, the Indians had settled down and had been close to white settlements or white towns, and there had been some integrations, some church schools, and so on. But in many parts of Western Canada, the coming of the white man in any numbers was only a very recent phenomenon. Well, what do you do with these Indians? They are a wandering, they're largely nomadic, Stone Age collection of tribes. They had no written language. They were exceedingly backward and primitive. Now, there would be several possibilities. One would be benign neglect, just leave them. Some would eventually get the idea, might be a good idea to pool some resources and bring in a teacher and teach their their kids. Some might gravitate toward white settlements where they might be able to get participate in the education system. But there was also, again, rightly or wrongly, Indians were the responsibility of the Dominion government. And the primary responsibility for their education fell upon the government of Canada. So what to do? Well, one thing that they could do, that the Dominion government decided to do, would be to bring the children together from far-flung areas into central areas for a residential school where they would stay 9 months of the year, the true separated from their families. And the purpose of the residential schools was to try to move the Indian people from Stone Age to the edge of the modern age within one generation. Give them the rudimentary skills they would need to participate in a modern world. That's reading and writing, mathematics, a little bit of maybe home economics for the girls, some industrial or shop for the boys, a little bit of history, a little bit of science. At least put them in the position to participate. And many graduates of the residential school said, well, yeah, it was tough being separated from their families, but they got the basics that allowed them to participate in the larger society. Now, that, of course, is being roundly condemned as including, and the nitwit, who is the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada, Beverly McLaughlin, called it even a form of cultural genocide. And it wasn't exterminating the people at all. It was trying to add to their repertoire, to educate them, with a view to their participating, not to exclude them, but to help draw them into society today. Now, the pedagogy might not be the pedagogy of 2017, that's quite possible, but the intentions and indeed many of the results were good. Now, there is no doubt that in the odd residential school, some children were sexually abused. That's wrong. It happens in white boarding schools as well. Sadly, the education profession will always attract a certain number of twisted individuals. But this was not factories for the mass sexual abuse of Native children, any more than the average private school is a factory for the sexual abuse of boys or girls. Although it does happen. Sadly, it does. So, it's interesting in that regard that one of the major Indian spokesmen has said it would be better to try to find prominent natives who have made a contribution and name a school or name a road after them. And that makes sense. It's not a matter of let's tear down the past, because it is the past. It's our past. As we should know it, we should honor it. And just because something happened in the past doesn't make it necessarily right today, but it was part of our development. But that's a lot more constructive. And it's something that might be argued, I think, in the ongoing debates in the United States as well. Another argument I've heard, and I kind of like this one, is now when we went to war in Afghanistan back in 2001 after 9/11, several causes or casus belli, reasons or causes for war were cited. One was that this was a hideout or safe haven for Al Qaeda, who allegedly perpetrated 9/11. I say allegedly. And it was a safe haven for them. That may or may not have been a good reason for the war. But another reason, and one that actually moved me more, was that the Taliban were our primitive destroyers. They were blowing up great cliff sculptures. A little bit like the ones on Mount Rushmore, but these were of These were priceless historical Buddhist carvings going back about 3,000 years. Now, there's virtually no Buddhism any longer in Afghanistan, but there was 3,000 years ago. These are priceless works that belong to humanity. But because they were not Islam, the wrecking crew of the Taliban were blowing them up. I thought that was a decent cause for war, but you know, let's pinch ourselves. Was what the Taliban were doing that much different from what the wrecking crews are doing today, blowing up, taking down Confederate statues, trying to erase history? And knowing history isn't the same thing as approving every bit of history. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. I'm going to be back with you in just a couple of minutes, and going to take a short musical interlude here. And this is Heather Miles and Justin Trevino. This time I know we're going to make it. And this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. And
this time, I know we're gonna make it. Facing life together, we'll make it.
me and you. Just as long as we're together, we'll make it, me and you.
Oh, it's Heather Miles and Justin Trevino. This time, I know we're going to make it. That's my last song on the musical interlude today. I'm going to play the state song of Maryland. And this is set to the tune you probably may, especially those who are German, know as a Christmas tune, O Tannenbaum, or Christmas Tree. And this is a very patriotic Confederate song written during the war of Yankee aggression, and makes reference to the fact that Maryland was put under basically martial law, because Maryland was a Confederate state. And I'm going to read the lyrics, and then I will play it. It was written by James Ryder Randall, 1839 to 1908. He wrote it in 1861. It was a reaction to the Baltimore riot of 1861, which was in favor of the Confederacy. It refers to President Lincoln as a tyrant, the despot, the vandal, and the Union is Northern scum. It also, interestingly, and this is written in 1861, uses references the phrase "sic semper tyrannis," Latin for "ever thus to tyrants," which would, of course, be the comment that John Wilkes Booth made as he leaped onto the stage at Ford's Theater after shooting President Lincoln, "ever thus to tyrants." Anyway, I'm going to read the lyrics and then we'll play it. I think this is a fine tribute to the fighting Confederate spirit of the state of Maryland. The despot's heel is on thy shore, Maryland, my Maryland. His torch is at thy temple door, Maryland, my Maryland. Avenge the patriotic gore that flecked the streets of Baltimore, and be the battle queen of yore, Maryland, my Maryland. Now, referring to the fact that Union troops shot and killed protesters on the streets of Baltimore. I love that line. Avenge the patriotic gore that flecked the streets of Baltimore, and be the battle queen of yore, Maryland, my Maryland. Hark to the to an exiled son's appeal, Maryland, my Maryland. My mother's state, to thee I kneel, Maryland, my Maryland. For life and death, for woe and weal, thy perilous chivalry reveal, and gird thy beauteous limbs with steel, Maryland, my Maryland. Thou wilt not cower in the dust, Maryland, my Maryland. Thy beaming sword shall never rust, Maryland, my Maryland. Remember Carroll's sacred trust, remember Howard's warlike thrust, and all thy slumbers with the just, Maryland, my Maryland. Come, 'tis the red dawn of the day, Maryland, my Maryland. Come with thy panoply, plead array, Maryland, my Maryland. With Ringgold's spirit for the fray, with Watson's blood at Monterey, with fearless Lowe and dashing May, Maryland, my Maryland. Those refer to other battles of prominence, the prominent Marylanders had fought. And I'm going to try to find the reference. The poem contains many references to the Revolutionary War, as well as to the Mexican-American War, and Maryland figures in that war, and many of whom had fallen into obscurity. When it was published in 1861, it became instantly popular in Maryland, aided by a series of unpopular federal actions there and throughout the South. It was sometimes called the Marseillaise of the South. Confederate Army bands played the song after they crossed into Maryland territory during the Maryland campaign of 1862. In 1864, the Southern Punch noted that the song was decidedly most popular among the claimants of a national song of the Confederacy. Actually, probably a good deal more popular than what would later become the song associated with as the anthem of the South, and that was Dixie. And after the war, author Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr. compared Maryland, My Maryland with John Brown's Body as the two most popular songs from the opposing side in the early months of the conflict. Continue the lyrics. Come, for thy shield is bright and strong, Maryland, my Maryland. Come, for thy dalliance does thee wrong, Maryland, my Maryland. Dalliance is like holding back. Come to thine own anointed throng, stocked with liberty all along, and sing thy dauntless slogan song, Maryland, my Maryland. Dear mother, burst the tyrant's chain, Maryland, my Maryland. Virginia should not call in vain. Virginia, of course, the southern state right across the boundary from Maryland. She meets her sisters on the plain. Sic semper, 'tis the proud refrain. That's ever thus the tyrants, meaning Lincoln, that baffles minions back amain, Maryland, my Maryland. I see the blush upon thy cheek, Maryland, my Maryland. For thou wast ever bravely meek, Maryland, my Maryland. But lo, there surges forth a shriek from hill to hill, from creek to creek. Potomac calls to Chesapeake, Maryland, my Maryland. Thou wilt not yield the vandal toll. That's, of course, to Lincoln. Maryland, my Maryland. Thou wilt not crook to his control, Maryland, my Maryland. Better the fire upon thee roll, better the blade, the shot, the bow, than crucifixion of the soul, Maryland, my Maryland. I hear the distant thunder hum, Maryland, my Maryland. The old line, bugle, fife, and drum, Maryland, my Maryland. She is not dead, nor deaf, nor dumb. Huzzah, she spurns the northern scum. She breathes, she burns. She'll come, Maryland, my Maryland. Wow. Yeah, that's what I call an anthem. And we're going to play that now. Maryland, my Maryland, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on The Fighting Side of Me on White Resistance Radio.com. Nice as that is, I think we'd like to have the words, wouldn't we? Maryland, my Maryland. We're gonna give this one a try. Once we can get by the ad here. This is by Tennessee Ernie Ferrari.
Despot's heel is on thy shore,
Maryland, my Maryland.
His torch is at thy temple door,
Maryland, my Maryland.
Avenge the patriotic gore that flecked the streets of Baltimore, and be the battle queen of yore,
Maryland, my Maryland.
Thou wilt not cower in the dust, Maryland. Sword shall never rise.
carol sacred trust. Remember Howard's warlike thrust.
And all thy slumberers with the just. Maryland, my Maryland.
Dear mother, burst the tyrant's chain.
Maryland, my Maryland.
Virginia should not call in vain.
Maryland, my Maryland.
She meets her sisters on the plain. Sick temper, 'tis the proud refrain that baffles minions back of Maine.
Maryland, my Maryland. Arise, arise in Maine.
And that's Tennessee Rennie Ford, Maryland, my Maryland. Hope you like it. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people. Quebec relocates migrants' aid distribution. You've got to know how to translate a lamestream media report. This is from the Globe and Mail of August the 30th. Quebec relocates migrants' aid distribution. Migrant. Would that be a bird that maybe got blown off course? No, they're the illegals. Okay. Quebec canceled mass distribution of welfare checks to asylum seekers. That's illegals. At the Montreal Convention Center this week, after facing concerns, the operation stigmatized the migrants and could raise security concerns. Stigmatized the migrants. Well, they're parasites. They're invaders. They came to my country. They weren't invited. They came here, and they've got their paws out. Come and support us, whether you like it or not. Now, that stigmatizes them. They've stigmatized themselves as being parasites and invaders. But anyway, we wouldn't want to hurt their feelings any. The province had initially planned to raise use the Cabinet's Palais de Congrès in Montmeil, the Congress Center, to hand out social assistance checks to more than 4,000 people, part of the wave of asylum seekers, but not asylum seekers, they're illegals! Across the Canada-U.S. border in recent months. The government announced on Tuesday it would carry out it out elsewhere, attributing the decision to the fact that fewer people than anticipated needed to pick up the checks by hand. The shift occurred less than 24 hours before the start of the planned three-day operation. Groups working with the illegals, who are mostly from Haiti, say they've been pressuring the provincial government for days to cancel the event at the convention center, which they say unfairly put the asylum seekers in the spotlight at a time when some are questioning the cost of caring for them. Oh, hey, boy, you don't want to get any of those taxpaying natives a bit restless, you know, having to pay for these people. So, you know, if you have this mass scene where they're lining up to collect their parasite payments, that just might antagonize people. Well, it ought to antagonize people. It ought to antagonize people big time. You see, this is all about managing the invasion. Not dealing with it, but managing it.
try to keep it low key so the natives won't get restless here. By doing the event in the convention center, it was stigmatizing. This is all a quotation. By doing the event in the convention center, it was stigmatizing. We told the government, it's unacceptable, said Nanette Pugh, spokeswoman for the Concertation Haïtien pour les Migrants, 2017, an umbrella group of 40 organizations created this month to help the illegals. Quote, they didn't think the decision through. Can you imagine having 4,000 people come get checks at the Palais de Congrès? No, I have trouble imagining invaders being entitled like that. You know, it's like breaking into somebody's house, stealing, and the mother or the father of the household puts on a pot of coffee and pulls out some cookies for the burglars. It's madness. It's madness of the first order. Anyway, what did she? By doing this event in the convention center, it was stigmatizing. We told the government it's unacceptable. Unacceptable. I'll tell you what's unacceptable: that people are allowed to illegally enter my country and then somehow are entitled to goodies. That's what's unacceptable. But the nerve of these people and their spokesman, the nerve. I'll tell you why. They get away with it because there aren't enough good people talking back and saying, what's unacceptable is invasion and parasitism. Ms. Pugh also raised fears of disruptions by far-right groups who've increased their public presence in Quebec in the wake of the arrival of the illegals in the province. Far-right, that is Quebec Patriots. Disruptions, had anybody actually threatened to disrupt? We don't know. I don't think so. Maybe they had threatened to protest. Oh, can't have that. Quote, there was concern that people with right-wing tendencies could disturb it. Ms. Pugh said, we have a lot of antennae out, and we know what's happening. We were aware of it, and the government was too. The provincial government initially said it chose the convention center because of the volume of recipients in temporary shelters who needed to pick up the checks in person. You see, if you have a residence, and as illegals get residences given to them, they can actually just get their pogey in the mail. However, not having a permanent residence, they actually have to haul their butt, their colored butt, and pick it up in person. Oh, the degradation of it, the stigmatizing. Yeah, you're a parasite, but you don't want to be seen as a parasite. Well, actually, the puppet masters don't want the public to see how well the parasites are doing, and that's what it is. Now, no point putting a nice name upon it. These are illegals, and they are parasites. Anyway, the article continues. On Tuesday afternoon, it said those numbers have dropped to fewer than 3,000. That is, those that are in temporary shelters. A spokesman for the Quebec Ministry of Employment and Social Solidarity declined to comment on security concerns, but said it would ensure the process, which will now take place in 5 temporary shelters in Montreal, would go smoothly. We are taking the necessary steps to ensure the good functioning and security operation. Gee, I think a better way of ensuring the security of the operation would be to send some troops down to the border and prevent the invasion. Madness. Madness of the First Order. Political leaders in both Quebec City and Ottawa have struggled to maintain the perception that the surge of
of illegals into Canada is under control, even while migrants are being housed in army tents at the Canada-US border and at the Olympic Stadium in Montreal. Yes, even the dumbest of the dummies can see this is an uncontrolled invasion. Yeah, and you the only way to control it is, let me think. A glimmer of an idea here. Yeah, build a fence, build a wall, build that wall. Yes, they're pouring across between border crossings. That's why they're illegals. They're sneaking in because of an anomaly in our interpretation of the law. You see, if they come to your border crossing and announce that they want to make a refugee claim, they're told to go back. They're already in a safe country, namely the United States. If they want to make such a claim, they have to make it there. However, if they cross through a field, 100 yards down from the proper border crossing, we then, for reasons that take us somewhere into the realm of insanity, now pretend we don't know where you came from. So you may make a refugee claim because we don't know that you were just in the United States. Well, that is idiocy. Of course, we know they were just in the United States. They could not have come from anywhere else, could they? I mean, unless you're prepared to imagine that they fell from outer space, and that's not too likely. Let me think here. Some of the public worries about the influx are being fed by Quebec politicians. François Legault, whose Coalition Avenir Québec have been closing in on the Liberals in public opinion polls, has questioned whether Quebec can afford to support the illegals. Quote, honestly, we don't have the financial means to pay for the housing, health, and education for all these people for years. But that's right. I mean, it will take 3 to 5 years to settle a refugee claim. Or more if they carry on the appeals. So yes, a frightened establishment is clawing at any possibility to try to disguise from Quebecers and Canadians the true cost of the invasion. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All these are Eastern Standard Time. I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever, and which is played by the 48th Highlanders of Canada. And we'll start in just a minute. There we are.